Welcome to the Scottsdale Big Book Study, where we will study the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Today's date is May 11th, 2024. My name is Tanya, and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Louisiana. Be your host for today's study. Our co-hosts are Johan and Nancy. And if you have any questions during the meeting, please contact either myself or any of the co-hosts by private message in the chat function. The chat function will be disabled until 5 minutes before the questions and answer session. Please note that the speaker, Harlan G., will be recorded for the duration of the study. However, the Q&A session, which follows, will not be recorded. We ask if you could please make sure to keep your microphone on mute at all times during today's study, and also please turn off your video if you are exercising, eating, or if you need to step away from your screen for any reason. During the meeting, we will post the link to our seventh tradition. This money goes towards the cost of our Zoom account, the cost of uploading our recordings, and we will also send contributions to our intergroup and WSO. We will post a link to the previous week's recordings. These are available by clicking on the link that will be posted in the chat box. I will now turn the meeting over to Harlan G.
Thank you, Tanya. Thank you very, very much. Now, before I say a word, I just want to wish every mom, aunt, friend of the family, you name it, a wonderful and happy Mother's Day tomorrow. I hope that you will have all the love and bounty and abundance that the world has to offer. And I hope that you will have a thoroughly enjoyable day. And I hope that this weekend is great for you. If you're a mom, if you're an aunt, if you're whomever, friend of the family, whatever, kid, I know my mom's been gone a very, very long time. I keep her in my heart, but especially on Mother's Day, I do think of her, and I hope that she's resting in heaven, and I hope that she is, she's waiting for me when I get up there as well. Speaking of Mother's Day, this is a very special day in the history of AA, which is our history as well. Why is it so special? Well, the dates are perfect. Perfect. May 11th, 1935 was the day before Mother's Day. And on the day before Mother's Day, what happened that is so special is Bill Wilson phoned Henrietta Seiberling from the lobby of the Mayflower Hotel in Akron, Ohio. And Henrietta Seiberling said to him, because they had had a Oxford group meeting about this in February, "We have been expecting you. Come on out." And Henrietta Seiberling phoned Ann Smith, Dr. Bob's wife, the day before Mother's Day. It was a Saturday. It was late afternoon, about 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And Henrietta Seiberling said to Ann Smith, "There's a rum hound here from New York, and he has a cure," and she used the word cure to the best of our knowledge, "for alcoholism," which it isn't a cure, but you get the picture. And Dr. Bob on that Saturday had brought home a plant, a potted plant, to give to his wife for Mother's Day. And Ann Smith said, "Dr. Bob brought me home a potted plant, and he's potted underneath the table that it sits on. He was so drunk that he fell, and he was underneath the table, and she couldn't get him up, so he was sleeping it off." And on Mother's Day, 1935, which would be tomorrow now in 2024, and Mother's Day is the 12th of May, 1935, Bill met Bob, and the rest is history. But I don't want to get into too detailed of an explanation, because then we'll get sidetracked into history, and we want to move forward in the big book. But what we want to remember is, don't ever think that Bill met Bob and then AA just sprang out of their butt. It didn't happen that way. There are hundreds and hundreds of miracles that went into the formation of AA, hundreds of miracles of unlikely people in unlikely situations. And not only were there hundreds of miracles before the meeting between Dr. Bob, not the least of which is Ebby and Roland and Dr. Jung and Sieber Graves Jr. I mean, these are just some off the top of my head, Hank Parkhurst. These are just some off the top of, well, Hank was later, but off the top of my head. But look at the miracles after the meeting between Bill and Bob, and it really gives you a picture of the omnipotence, the power, and love of God Almighty for his drunken children. And this gives you a picture of how much God loved us, and he bestowed upon the world hundreds and hundreds of miracles so that we could be here together this morning. Isn't it nice? Is it odd or is it God that today being the 11th, the Saturday before Mother's Day, and it works out not only perfectly date-wise, it works out perfectly day-wise as well in 1935. And all you got to do is Google the calendar, Google 1935 calendar. You'll see that the 11th was on Saturday and the 12th was on Sunday, and the 12th was Mother's Day as well. So it's an interesting little sideline. Now, before we get going, I just want to remind all of you that on June the 1st, which is a Saturday, we are changing our time to 7:30 a.m. Pacific time. That's 7:30 a.m. Pacific time, which is 10:30 Eastern time. So it's going to be earlier in the morning because I've been remiss. For 4 years in a row, I've ignored the fact that we go from about 170, 180 in the wintertime to about 120 in the summertime, because it's just not a time for the central time and the eastern time zone people to be at a meeting. It's just not conducive for them. So they're not coming. And the feedback that I have been getting from people that cannot attend has been astounding, just astounding. So I'm really excited to announce again, June the 1st, which is a Saturday, we are moving the time to 7:30 a.m. Pacific time. So if you're thinking, is June 1st the last of this? No, it's June 1st is the first of the meetings at 7:30 a.m. So I hope that that will work for you, and I hope that you will be able to attend, and I hope that we will have you in our new time zone as well. Now, a couple of other things before we get started. I may reinforce these things later. May 19th, for the virtual intergroup, I'm doing a workshop on sponsorship. I don't have the details. I don't have the Zoom information, but we're going to be doing that May 19th for the virtual intergroup. And on July 12th, 13th, and 14th, July 12th, 13th, and 14th, at the Crown Plaza Hotel in Phoenix, we are going to have an old-fashioned big book retreat. So that's going to be hopefully something you can attend July 12th, 13th, and 14th. We're going to cover all the steps. We're going to give you an opportunity to expand your God squad. We're going to give you an opportunity to enjoy fellowship. Diane, did you have something real quick to say about this thing that's coming up here in May 19th? Or do you want to wait till we do Q&A? Why don't we wait on that, Diane? I'm going to put your hand down. Let's get started, and we'll do that before Q&A that's coming up in about an hour. Okay, so we're in the chapter more about alcoholism, and this is the last of the chapters that is going to concern itself with step number one. This is the last of the chapters in step one. What are the step one chapters? The doctor's opinion, Bill's story, there is a solution, and more about alcoholism. So we have those chapters on step one. No chapter gets as much treatment as step number one. Now, we're going to be at the bottom of 31 when we get started. We do not like to pronounce. That's where we're going to start. But just to kind of review, as is my wont, we kind of review before we get going, and that is this. It says here on page 30, and I'm going to paraphrase. We don't like to, oh, by the way, that's why I'm wearing my Dr. Bob t-shirt today. I got this in Akron at Dr. Bob's house. And I wore this t-shirt today because this is the date that Henrietta Seiberling and Bill Wilson spoke. And this is the date before Bill met Bob. So I put on my Dr. Bob's house in Akron, Ohio. It says, welcome home, Dr. Bob's house, Akron, Ohio. And before God closes your eyes, I hope that you will go to Dr. Bob's house in Akron. And I hope that you will go to East Dorset, Vermont to see Bill Wilson's birthplace and cemetery plot with Lois. They're buried together with the Wilsons. Grandpa Wilson's there, Grandma Wilson's there, and so on. And I hope that you will get to Stepping Stones in New York, which is in Katona, New York. But I hope that you will get there and see the home where Bill and Lois lived from the early 40s until they passed away. Bill died in 71, Lois died in 88. So I hope that you will get to those three places before God closes your eyes. This is something that I hope will happen. Okay, step one is on page 30. I'm just reviewing now, and it says here, the idea that some, oh wait, I'm backing up here. No person likes to think he is bodily, the allergy, and mentally, the twist, different from his fellows. Therefore, it's not surprising that our drinking careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove we could drink like other people. We cannot. It's never going to happen. As a matter of fact, it gets worse and worse and worse over time. The idea that somehow someday he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession. What is an obsession? It's a thought that pushes aside all thought to the contrary, all thought of every abnormal drinking. The persistence of this illusion, what's an illusion? An illusion is something that appears real, but indeed is not. It is not real. An illusion. What conjures up illusion? Magicians. They direct you to where you're looking. You know darn well that they really didn't steal the Empire State Building, or you know darn well that they didn't really saw a woman in half, or at least we hope so. We hope not. You know darn well that this is magic, that you're watching magic, but yet at the same time, because of the illusion that is created, it looks exactly the way, that he sawed a woman in half, or he made a rabbit appear out of nowhere, or they took away the Empire State Building. If you've ever seen, this is something that magicians use. The illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it to the gates of insanity or death. And how many people? I know I have some in my environment. I have some in my life. They're not coming in here today. They laugh at recovery. I have dear friends who are crying out for relief from this addiction. And they laugh derisively at OA. They think it's the stupidest thing they've ever heard in their life. And one of my friends, he's a very successful guy. He's a wonderful guy. He was the best man at my wedding. I was the best man at his wedding. He's 400 pounds. He can't get in and out of a car. He has watched me go from 700 to a little over 200, wants nothing to do with this. This is just the most ridiculous thing he's ever heard of in his life. He just doesn't understand what this is about or why anybody in their right mind would do this, but yet he cannot walk a half a block. He can't walk. He can't function. So we have to understand that we are lucky enough to be here. We're lucky enough to be here. We had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics because of the physical allergy and the twist of the mind. And then the next sentence is the last one we'll talk about in the review. It says, this is the first step in recovery. Now, there's a lot of questions, and this is going to come up in the workshop that I'm going to be doing on sponsorship. How do you work step one? Well, I'll give you a clue. You don't work step one or two or three. You don't work them. They are conclusions of the mind. They are conclusions of the mind. And how do you get to that conclusion of the mind? By reviewing for yourself all the information you have about the allergy, about the twist of the mind, and comparing it to your life. Comparing it to your life, and it will show you, yes, I need this program. Yes, I too am somebody who must have God's help, because Lord only knows I've tried hard enough and long enough to beat this game on my own, and I cannot do it. I just can't do it. Can't beat the game on my own. Page 31, bottom of the page, we do not like to pronounce any individual as alcoholic, but you can quickly diagnose yourself. And we talk about this. This is a self-diagnosing disease. And a lot of times people will call me up and they'll ask me, how do I know if I'm a compulsive overeater? See, in my case, I knew from the time I was 3, 4 years old that I was not normal when it came to food. My consumption of food was out of hand from the moment I was born. And the way I thought about food, the way I reacted to food, the way food, the position that food and weight had in my life was abnormal from day one. And when I came in on February 2nd, 1979. And I looked around and I saw a room full of people that looks absolutely like the room I see right now. I see a bunch of people. Now, I can't see all of you. I can just see faces. And most of you, unfortunately, have your cameras off, or you don't even have your picture on there anymore. People used to put a picture up there. Now they don't, you don't even see them doing that. Well, I don't understand why not. So at least we know who you are, but that's okay. Whatever. But I saw a bunch of people that looked just like you. And I looked around and I thought, I know I have a problem. I'm effed up when it comes to food. I couldn't understand what you were doing here, because you looked, as a group, not you specifically, you look normal to me. I was 30 years younger than anybody in that room. I came in, I was 24 years old. I was 30 years younger than anybody in that room. And I was 300 pounds heavier than anybody in that room at that time. And I looked around and I thought, I know I'm screwed up here, but I can't imagine what on earth you're doing here. What the heck are you doing here? So that was what my experience was. But let's see if when somebody calls me up and they say to me, hey, I don't know if I'm a compulsive overeater or not. And I ask them some questions and I say, well, when you eat certain foods, is there a party in your mouth? Is there a feeling that you have, you can't wait to get this stuff again? And that even though it's in your mouth and it's on your plate, you're concerned that you're just not going to get enough of it, or you want to make sure you can get more soon. Sometimes they say yes, and sometimes they say no. And I say, do you crave food in your craving is the allergy. Do you crave food once you've eaten it? In other words, when you eat certain foods, Can you stop eating them, or do you just find yourself completely and utterly out of control once you eat them? And if they're still not sure, I say, do you obsess in your mind about food? Do you obsess in your mind about certain foods? You can't wait to get to them, things like that. Is that what you do? And they still say they're not exactly sure. So here's what I do. I point them to this paragraph, and it says, step over to the nearest bar room and try some controlled drinking. Try to drink and stop abruptly. Try it more than once. It will not take long for you to decide. If you are honest with yourself about it, it may be worth a bad case of jitters if you get a full knowledge of your condition. So this is what I say to them, because the barroom thing may not apply. This is what I say. What is your favorite food in the world? Ice cream, pizza, what have you? 99 times out of 100, 99 times out of 100, they will say ice cream. It is, if we were playing the match game, the match game, and if you give the response and it's the number one, if you're ever playing the match game, just listen to me on this. If you ever get on the match game and you want, and they have a thing where it says, what is the favorite thing of most people? Say ice cream and you'll be fine, because 99% of the people respond with, my favorite thing is ice cream. Okay, so here's what I tell them. Go buy a half a gallon or a gallon of ice cream of your favorite flavor. I said, I want you to take 3 teaspoons of that ice cream. 3 teaspoons of the ice cream. Put it back in the freezer. Let's today's Saturday, right? If that ice cream is still there on Monday, you're probably not a compulsive overeater. If it's gone by Monday, or you've replaced it by Monday a couple of times, welcome home. Welcome to Overeaters Anonymous. This is how I prescribe the test. That's what I feel gives you the indication. Get a gallon of ice cream or a half a gallon of ice cream, depending on your appetite, your size, whatever. 3 teaspoons of ice cream. Put it back in the freezer. If today's Saturday, if it's still there by Monday, you're good. You're fine. If it's gone tonight, this afternoon, whatever, welcome to Overeaters Anonymous. Welcome home. Okay, so that's what I do. It may be worth a bad case of the jitters, but this will show you graphically what the story is. Or if they order a pizza instead of going back for the ice cream, they get pizza, French fries, cookies, cake, whatever. I had one gal tell me, I says, what is your favorite food in the whole world? She said, broiled fish. I said, don't you lie to me. I said, no, it's not. I said, broiled fish is really good, but come on, let's get. Oh, she started laughing. She started laughing. She said, chocolate covered peanuts. I said, okay, now we're talking. I said, go get yourself 1 pound or 2 pounds of chocolate covered peanuts. Take 2 handfuls of chocolate covered peanuts, put them back in the cupboard. If they're still there on Monday, you're good. If they're not, welcome home. So, but if you get on the match game, first response is, or the first thing is, go for ice cream and you'll win the game. You'll win the game. Page 32, though there is no way. Page 32, though there is no way of proving it, we believe that early in our drinking careers, most of us could have stopped drinking. But the difficulty is that few alcoholics have enough desire to stop while there is yet time. We have heard of a few instances where people who showed definite signs of alcoholism were able to stop for a long period because of an overpowering desire to do so. Here is one. Now, I can only speak for myself and I can only relate my own story. I can't relate your story or someone else's story. I can only relate my story. My story is I was completely out of control by the time I had an awareness of anything in the world. I have memories. And not only do I have memories, my mother and father told me these stories hundreds of times, that by the time I was three, by the time I was five, by the time I was six, doctors were screaming at my mother and father. Doctors were screaming at them about how fat I was getting and how into food I was. How the doctors knew I was into food, I couldn't tell you. But this is something that illustrates my life. I don't know about your life, but here's something that is a little different between alcoholics and compulsive overeaters. In the very beginning for alcoholics, there seems to be, at the beginning, not at the end, there seems to be a lot of camaraderie, joyousness, and fun about using alcohol as a sort of social lubricant. There's drinking stories. I sponsor one guy who is multiply addicted. He is an alcoholic and a compulsive overeater. He tells funny, entertaining, mesmerizing stories about drinking and going. They met these women, and he and his friend, they told these women some kind of booby mindsa. A booby mindsa technically is a story your grandmother would have told. Booby is grandmother. Mindsa is a story. But it's a story about how they're going to take these women here. They're going to do this for these women. And it was all BS. It was all nothing. Eaters, we don't have stories like that. We don't. You know, I've said this before. We were kidding about this before the meeting started. I don't have a story that said, man, there I was at the buffet going through my 15th hamburger, and there she was, looking just like I pictured her all my life. And she sat down and said, so what's new, chubby? No, I don't have any stories like that at all. And eating is a very solitary activity. I have a memory of this story about me. This is not like my friends' drinking stories at all. When I was a little boy, there was a company in Chicago, Salerno Butter Co. Salerno. They made butter cookies and they made pastries and chocolate chip cookies. And there used to be a commercial on TV. If you're from Chicago, you remember where it said, Mommy, what is it, dear? I want a Salerno butter cookie. And we used to wear them on our fingers like rings because there was holes in the middle of them. Well, anyway, I got my hands on a box of them when I was probably four, five. And it was an evening. And we had had dinner already, and I got a hold of these butter cookies. And my mother and father were watching television. I don't know what the hell was going on. I'm in the closet. I'm eating these cookies when all of a sudden my mother opened the door of the closet and I burst into tears. Now, the reason that I burst into tears is because I knew I was doing something dreadfully wrong. If I was playing with a toy, if I was coloring, if I was whatever I was doing, up to and including God knows what, I wouldn't have hid and I wouldn't have been scared of being caught. But because I was eating and eating something I should not have been eating, immediately, I burst into tears because I knew I was doing something wrong. That's my life. That's my life. Could I have stopped? I don't think so. I don't think so. I don't think that this is as applicable to us for lots of different reasons than it is to the alcoholic. I'm not sure. Maybe my friend, I think he's here today. Maybe later he'll, if there's a some reason, we'll bring him out if he wants to come out. I don't have to break his anonymity or anything. If he wants to, he can address it. But it seems to me that one of the differences, and I'm not here to cite differences, but it's necessary here. At the beginning, drinking is a lot more fun. It's a lot more acceptable. Is that the word I'm looking for? It's fun. It's conviviality. It's congeniality. The drug users have some of that. But some of the drinking stories are funny stories. You know, I went to AA in Eugene, or there is no OA in Eugene, Oregon. It doesn't exist. There's no such thing. So I had to go to AA when I lived there. I went there for 9 years. I lived there 9 years. And some of the stories that you hear in an AA meeting, I mean, the room is just breaking up. It's like a nightclub in there. You know, some of the stories are hysterical stories. You never find that in an OA room. I've been here for 45 years. I've heard stories from men, women, bulimics, anorexics, and morbidly obese people. I have heard stories from people you wouldn't believe. Never was the room cracking up, because eating is a very solitary, very sullen, very shame-filled addiction, even when we are children. There is just something inside of us that says this should not be, we shouldn't be doing this. We should not be done. So that's a difference. But I don't believe I could have stopped. Maybe you could have. I don't know. I don't know. I believe that before I had language, before I had an awareness of the world around me, I was gone. I mean, gone with the food. Let's face it. I was 335 pounds in high school. I was 600 pounds by the time I graduated college, and 700 pounds by the 80s, early 80s. So not a good situation there for the eaters. Let's go on. Now, this story is one of the stories that you find sort of lifted from this book, which is called The Common Sense of Drinking by Richard Peabody. And Richard Peabody wrote a book that is one of the four books that framed or was highly influential on the big book of AA, the book of James in the New Testament, the Varieties of Religious Experience by William James, the Sermon on the Mount by Emmett Fox, and this book, The Common Sense of Drinking by Richard Peabody. And Peabody has all kinds of stuff in here that is about as accurate as 2 and 2 is 83. He believes that if you get a hobby, you start reading books, you start relaxing, you start taking walks, that this will lift your alcoholism. Nothing could be further from the truth. But there are some things that Peabody says to us that are so true that Bill Wilson's copy of The Common Sense of Drinking is in the AA archives as we speak. So this is highly influential. Peabody, I've said this before, Peabody was an alcoholic. He wrote this book, and it was published in 1930. And in 1936, just 1 year after AA started, and no, he never knew about AA, he died of his own alcoholism. So he had all kinds of things in this book that were not true, inapplicable, and just nuts. But there's three concepts that Peabody had that are so true, we need to remember them. Number one, the disease is permanent. Losing your weight does not make the disease go away. Being abstinent does not make this disease abate or go away. Losing weight doesn't change the disease. It's permanent. The disease is progressive whether you are eating or not. So I have 25 years of abstinence. That did not chase this disease away. This disease is worse today than it was yesterday. There was a song when I was young and in Chicago, and we used to listen to the radio. WCFL and WLS played rock and roll, and we used to listen, and there was a song by the Spiral Staircase. It was a group called the Spiral Staircase, and it was a song called I Love You More Today Than Yesterday, But Not As Much As Tomorrow. So I need God and I need program more today than I did yesterday, but not as much as I'm going to need God and need program and need all of you tomorrow. Because every day that I'm lucky enough to wake up, my disease is progressively getting worse and worse and worse and worse. Why is that? It's because of the aging factor. As we age, our metabolism begins to slow down. As we age, I don't have the muscle and orthopedic system in my body to burn the food. I just don't. And through the aging process, different hormones, different chemicals within the body start abating, start being reduced quite a bit. And those burn fat and those burn food. So the aging process means that the disease gets worse. And the only thing I can do is work the program harder and harder and harder. And this is the part you're not going to want to hear. You may want to cover your ears for this one. As I age, I eat less food unless I want to gain weight and be in trouble. I'm going to say that again. It's hard to hear, but as I age, I get less food and I have to cut my food consumption or I will gain weight. I'm going to be 70 2 weeks from yesterday. I'm going to be 70 years old. And you can bet your life that if I went back to eating the way I did, even at 65, I never thought these words would come out of my mouth. I thought I'd be long dead by now. But if I went back to eating like I did even 4 years ago, 5 years ago, when I was 65, I would gain weight in leaps and bounds. If I went back to eating the way I ate 10 years ago, I would probably be dead by the end of this year. It was abstinent for me then, but my food plan, not abstinent. Abstinence is abstaining from compulsive overeating and compulsive food behaviors while working toward or maintaining a healthy body weight. That's the definition of abstinence for all of us, no matter what. For all of us, abstaining from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors while working toward or maintaining a healthy body weight. But my food plan has to change. My food plan has to adapt for my activity level and my age. Very important. If you're on a food plan, you don't really understand why you're not losing weight, why you're plateauing or gaining weight, because this food plan worked 3 years ago, 4 years ago, you have to take into account the progressive nature of the disease, the aging process. So you're going to have to see a nutritionist, get a different food plan, and unfortunately, it's going to have less food on it. I promise you. I know that sucks, but you'll get used to it and you'll have a great life if you just listen to your body, listen to God. Everything will be okay. I promise you. Okay. A man of 30 was doing a great deal of spree drinking. This is kind of a story that's in the common sense of drinking, which is why I brought that up. Sort of plagiarized, but it's okay. He was nervous in the morning after these bouts and quieted himself with more liquor. Was liquor his problem? No, liquor was the solution to his problem. Food is never the problem for a compulsive overeater. Food is the solution to the problem. And what is the problem? He said he was very nervous in the morning. He was nervous. He was scared. He was angry. He was tense, and liquor quieted him down. In other words, liquor was the solution to the problem. He was ambitious to succeed in business and saw he would get nowhere if he drank at all. He came to the conclusion that he could not consume alcohol safely. He came to that conclusion based on a review of his own life. Once he started, he had no control whatever. That's because of the allergy. He made up his mind that until he had been successful in business and had retired, he would not touch another drop. An exceptional man, he remained bone dry for 25 years and retired at the age of 55 after a successful and happy business career. Then he fell victim to a belief which practically every alcoholic has. Now, he remained bone dry on sheer willpower. You will see that in alcoholics and drug addicts and gamblers. You will not see anybody that can approach 25 years of abstinence without a hell of a program. I work my butt off in this program. I am up. I'm at 'em. I'm on vision every day. I'm not looking to be canonized. I'm not looking for a medal over here. But I'm telling you, I'm very proud of the fact I work my butt off in this program. I do the best that I can to maintain a recovery. I work very, very hard. Okay. Now, that his long period of sobriety and self-discipline had qualified him to drink as other men. And how many times did I get down to a reasonable weight? How many times did I diet down? And I figured, okay, now I can eat this. Now I can eat that. And I knew that I wasn't going to gain all my weight back in one sitting. So I went crazy. I went crazy. And not only did I gain all the weight back that I had lost, I was always on the bonus program. In other words, lose 90, gain 170. Lose 170, gain 260. I was never on this mythical thing of, well, I lost 50 pounds and I put it back, meaning the same amount of weight. Never, never, no. I was always slingshotted, catapulted way beyond the weight that I had originally lost. Why is that? Now I know it's because the disease is permanent, progressive, and if untreated, it is fatal. Okay. He's not drinking for 25 years. Everything is right with the world. Let's continue. Out came his carpet slippers and a bottle. You don't hear dinner jacket and carpet slippers anymore. There was a time when men would have a dinner jacket and carpet slippers and a sleeping jacket and a sleeping cap. If you ever watch these old the best one is Christmas Carol, the original one, the one that the black and white movie, the Christmas Carol. What does Scrooge have? He has a cap, you know, a sleeping cap that you'd wear and a candle thing, but he has slippers and a nightgown. You don't see people doing that anymore. You just don't. But anyway, that's okay. In 2 months, he was in a hospital, puzzled and humiliated. In 2 months, after 25 years of sobriety, 25 years of being a dry drunk, in 2 months, he was in a hospital. Look how fast he deteriorated. And this is what happened to me many times. In 2 months, he was in a hospital, puzzled and humiliated. He tried to regulate his drinking for a while. In other words, he would only have two slices of pizza. In other words, he would only have half a gallon of ice cream. In other words, he was trying to control and enjoy his eating. And what did we learn? You cannot control and enjoy your eating simultaneously. You just can't do it. Okay. Then gathering, he made several trips to the hospital meanwhile. In other words, he was so bad they had to take him in. Then gathering all his forces, he attempted to stop altogether and found he could not, because he had triggered the physical allergy by imbibing in certain things. He triggered that physical allergy. And when I eat pizza, and when I eat pie, or I eat cookies or whatever, Chips Ahoy, whatever, tonight, Saturday night, I'd have a threesome. Me, Little Debbie, and Sarah Lee. Me, Little Debbie, and Sarah Lee, we went through a lot of those pecan pies and a lot of those trays of brownies from Sara Lee, and they would always be dumped either in ice cream or Cool Whip, or they'd be smothered in Cool Whip or ice cream every single time. Then gathering all his forces, he attempted to stop altogether and found he could not. Every means of solving his problem, which money could buy, was at his disposal. Every attempt failed. Now, a lot of us think, man, if I had the money, the famous talk show person, the one that's the billionaire. Oh, man, every time I see her, she's bigger and bigger. But, oh, man, if I had her money, oh, man, I'd hire a chef and a personal trainer and everything would be okay. She's got her money and she's bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger every time I see her on television. And boy, she's on TV a lot, isn't she? Even though she's supposedly retired. But she's bigger and bigger, because no matter how much money you have, it doesn't counteract this disease. And I want to remind you of something that I want you to know is so key to pass to your sponsees. No earthly condition caused you to become a compulsive overeater, and no earthly condition is going to remove your illness. Stop looking for reasons why you're a compulsive overeater on earth. They don't exist. You can blame your mother or your father or your sister or your husband or your wife or your children or your boss, and it makes sense to you. But truthfully, either you are a compulsive overeater or you are not. There are twins and siblings. Some are alcoholics, some are not. Some are not. Same house, same mom, same dad, same everything. One's a compulsive overeater, one's not. There's twins. One weighs 370, one weighs 182. One's a drug addict, one isn't. They're twins. They shared a womb. And one is, and one isn't. Though a robust man at retirement, he went to pieces quickly and was dead within 4 years. When this disease is untreated, it is fatal. It is fatal. This disease will kill you. But before it kills you, it will strip you of every shred of dignity a human being is entitled to. It will isolate you. It will humiliate you. It will degrade you. It will beat you down unmercifully and then set you on fire. This disease is worse than death. This disease is the absence of life. This disease means I cannot enjoy the day. I cannot enjoy the laughter of a child. I cannot enjoy my life as it is. I'm constantly wishing everybody and everything were different. I can't spend my life like that. And the worst part about this disease is two things, really. Well, three. It makes me hate God. It makes me hate myself. And it makes me hate being alive. I want to live every day. I have a heart. I have desires. I have a heart and I wish I could retire. I wish I didn't have to work anymore. I wish I had this, or I wish I had that, or I wish I had this or that differently in my life. I don't. I have to accept life as life is. But I love God, and I believe in God, and I know He believes in me, and I like myself. I don't want to live anymore when I hate my own self. I don't want to look at myself in the mirror and hate what I see. I don't want to look in the mirror anymore and despise being alive. And every time I see myself, I'm bigger and bigger and bigger and broker and bigger and broker and bigger. I want to live that way. I don't want to be late for everything or absence or have to lie and live in that shame and that guilt and that remorse. Top of page 33, this will be the last paragraph probably that we'll cover today. This case contains a powerful lesson. Most of us have believed that if we remain sober for a long stretch, we could thereafter drink normally. And how many of us have believed that because we lost X amount of weight, that now we're okay? We're not. We have a disease, and only a spiritual experience, spiritual awakening will conquer it. But here is a man who at 55 years found he was just where he left off at 30. No, he was worse. He was worse. We have seen the truth demonstrated again and again. Once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. Commencing to drink after a period of sobriety, we are in a short time as bad as ever or worse. If we are planning to stop drinking, there must be no reservation of any kind, nor any lurking notion that someday we will be immune to alcohol. How many times did I fantasize that if I had a girlfriend and a house and a dog, and a job, that I would never compulsively overeat ever again. I was married for 17 and a half years. We had a beautiful home in Eugene, Oregon for the first 9, and a beautiful home in Scottsdale, Arizona for the next 8. And it didn't cure me. I had 2 beautiful German Shepherds and a Great Pyrenees. And we had a West Highland White Terrier and a Pomeranian. Yeah, we had a veritable zoo over there. And we had money. And we went to Hawaii 3 times. And we went here, we went there. Don't get divorced. It all goes away. Don't get divorced, guys. Guys, hang in there. Don't get divorced. I didn't want the divorce, but I believe me, I'm lucky I could buy a box of Kleenex when the damn divorce was over. But the bottom line is still this. Didn't cure me. It didn't make the disease go away. And I'm a Cubs fan. I'm rooting for the right team. I'm rooting for the team you're supposed to root for if you have faith. I'm not rooting for the Dodgers or the Yankees or the Angels or the Mets. I'm rooting for the Cubs, the good guys. I see you. But the bottom line is this. The bottom line is nothing helped. I was living out the dream that I had. I had the beautiful home. I had the house, the wife. I had the money. It didn't cure me. It didn't cure me. So it's very, very important to remember that the disease is permanent. It never goes away. Alex, take off that hat before somebody thinks you're an imbecile. But the bottom line, Alex, take off your Dodger hat. Somebody's going to think you're a moron. But anyway, the bottom line is that this disease is permanent. This disease is progressive. And this disease, if untreated, is 100% fatal. Here are my choices. I can die with the disease, or I can die from the disease. What's the difference? If I die with this disease, that means that I have some other reason why I'm dying, but I have this disease, but it's in remission. It's not killing me. If I die from this disease, the death is not only destructive, but it's isolated. And amputations come into play, and diabetes, and kidney failure, heart failure, liver, fatty liver. All these various things, all this, these various cardiac and respiratory and all these various factors come into play. When you die with the disease, you probably have a good life. If you die from this disease, the end part of your life, most of it is going to just be a nightmare. It's going to be a nightmare. So we're going to stop. And before I turn this over, I'm going to remind you, Alex, take off your Dodger hat. Somebody's going to think you're an imbecile. But the bottom line is that we have May 19th coming up in just 8 days from now. We're going to do a virtual workshop for the virtual, not virtual, a Zoom workshop for the virtual intergroup. And that's going to take place, I believe, at 1 p.m. Eastern time. I'm on Pacific time, so I got to translate that to noon, 11, 10 o'clock in the morning, Pacific time. We're 3 hours behind. Arizona doesn't change their clocks. It's confusing. But anyway, right now we're on Pacific time. So that's coming up. Diane, are you here with us? Do you want to say something about that? And then before, while Diane is unmuting or doing what she needs to do, I'm going to remind you that also on June the 1st, which is a Saturday, we are going to switch to 7:30 a.m. Pacific time, which is 10:30 a.m. Eastern time for this particular workshop. And also July 11th, 12th, or 12th, 13th, and 14th, Saturday, Friday night, Saturday, Sunday, we are going to do an old-fashioned retreat right here in Phoenix. Scottsdale is a bedroom community of Phoenix. It's a suburb of Phoenix. I'm glad I don't live in Phoenix, but that's okay. That's for another time. I'm glad I live in Scottsdale, but that's for another time. It's going to be at the Crown Plaza Hotel near the airport in Phoenix. Alex, take off your Dodger hat before somebody thinks you're an idiot. Okay, now, Diane, what do you want to say about this workshop?